Scott Wells. I am the Forage and Cropping System Specialist for University of Minnesota. I'm stationed on the St. Paul campus.
Scott, tell me about this field day, this demonstration that focuses on winter camelina and why folks like you are really excited about its potential.
Yeah, so today what we're trying to show farmers, industry, individuals, the public, and so on, is that we have these new crops that can fit and synergize with corn and soybean, because we grow a lot of corn and soybean in this state, in the upper Midwest. We're trying to show that entire life cycle, taking it from the field, moving it into the industrial plant to crush the seed, and then actually having cooking demonstrations with the oil. So that way people can walk away and say, this is a real crop. And it is. Winter camelina has been around for 10,000 years now. So now, but we're starting to re-envision how some of these crops can fit on the Midwestern landscape, protect our natural resources, give added value to the farmers, particularly ones that are rotating with soybean production systems, support the entire rural supply chain.
So when you look at winter camelina, is it a double crop that you see the most potential? Is it a cover crop? Do you see it replacing soybeans in some rotations, or could it be any of the above?
So probably the easiest way to think about winter camelina is that it does function like a cover crop in terms of nitrogen sequestration, stopping erosion, things of that nature. It also goes further on to provide pollinator, because most cover crops are terminated before they'd be utilized in corn and soybean. With this system, we allow it to flower, so we're getting the pollinators. The way we see this is a complement to soybean production systems. Yes, the oils are complementary between the two of them, but we're framing it. If you want to grow soybean, put some camelina out in front of it. You're growing corn, growing wheat, things of that nature. So it could function as a double crop right now, as a relay crop, because camelina has a much longer life cycle than some of the other oil seeds. But there's breeding improvement to shorten that life cycle, because we already know the penalty of delayed planting. So we're working on trying to optimize that entire system, not just the camelina side of it, but also the soybean breeding program as well, so that they come together to provide the farmers options.
So winter camelina would be seeded in the fall and then terminated ahead of that crop, preferably soybeans.
Yeah, so there's kind of two ways, an easy way and a hard way. The easy way to come in any of your short season crops, spring wheat, corn silage, those would be some of the easier crops to come in. Sweet corn, smaller acreage, but that would work as well. You plant that up in the fall, you could direct seed it, persist over the fall, provides ecosystem services, persist through the spring, goes through exponential growth when we need it the most, when our tiles are running. And then that you could plant soybean into that, or you can double crop with it, harvest the oil seed third week of June, and then you'd have you could run a full season soybean or a short season soybean, depending on if you're relay or double cropping with it.
Let's talk about the food, the nutritional benefits of winter camelina. You have food processors here today and culinary specialists. Would it be best to kind of unpack this by comparing it to other oil seeds that are common as a food ingredient, or does this kind of stand alone?
I think that question's best positioned for our food scientists, who I think you'll interview later today. So I'm going to defer on that one.
Anything else from a forage perspective or just from an agronomic angle on winter camelina that you think we need to touch on?
I don't see it as a forage crop per se, but the meal itself is already being used and tested in hog programs. I guess the big takeaway I want is we're providing a new crop for the upper Midwest that fits in corn and soybean, provides added value to the farmer, and protects the environment. It's kind of the win-win, and that's really the big piece on it. And the reason we've been able to do this is because we have received federal funding from USDA, in-state funding from Minnesota Department of Agriculture, also partners like the Walton Family Foundation, because a lot of these organizations are seeing the value of plant science research, and it has been on the decline. And so us researchers need to ensure that we can continue to get public investment so we can produce these next generation crops to meet today's issues.
As far as the amount of acres of camelina that are in cropping systems in Minnesota or in the upper Midwest right now, any idea?
For winter camelina, it would be quite low. I see most of that still kept on the research stations. I mean, we do have pilot scales up to 10 to 15, 20 acres, but again, we're being very hesitant to roll in technologies out before they're ready.
So what are kind of those next steps? And I know you've touched on it to some degree, but getting it to that point where it is ready to go on a bigger scale.
The next step from an agronomic point of view is dealing with the trade-offs. Anytime that we are relaying a crop, you have two crops competing against each other, how are you going to balance that? So that's a big one. We have a lot of agronomic questions around that. Also, there's breeding questions around, can we get a camelina that has bigger seed? Can it be a bit earlier in its life cycle so it puts less competition stress on the soybean? Additionally, are there soybeans that pair well with that as well? So there's kind of two different breeding pipelines. And then obviously is continuing development on the supply chain. That's going to be a big one because, as we all know, the question that we get, what's it worth? And so that's, you know, all of that is happening in parallel. Where, you know, so we're not waiting until we already have all the answers discovered agronomically before we start the supply chain. So I think, you know, we have to wait. We're building all of this capacity now. And I'd say the biggest obstacle for us is going to be able to continue to do the secure the funding to be able to do the science that we need, the science questions we need to answer before we can package. So I can say, here you go, farmer, here's the technology, here's how it would work, here's the risk associated with it.
Well, Scott, while I've got you here, let's talk about forage a little bit. And first cutting of alfalfa has progressed pretty rapidly in some parts of the state, but there's been a lot of moisture. So how has that impacted quality, progress, and probably some farmers have moved on to a second cutting already?
So we have moved. We have had some lodging issues. We've also had issues with leaf hopper. We've also had some issues, some isolated issues with alfalfa weevil as well, because we've been pushed out of the field, and that is a real issue about getting into our second cuts on time. We're seeing the quality is being pushed a bit later than what we typically would be harvesting. And so it's just been, it's been a challenging spring for everybody. We also, when we were doing some of our spring seeding, we didn't get the rain that we needed early on, and those stands are not looking great. So it's been a tough year, and we also came out of a rough winter as well. So many of our stands were already under stress. Now we're putting even more stress on them with all the rain, and we're not able to get out into the field.
Scott, I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a bunch.